Freedom isn't free. The founders of America and before them the settlers of America sacrificed much that we might have and enjoy the liberty that we have. And yet today it seems to be sifting through our fingers. How do we understand this and how can we get back on the right track? Our guest for this particular segment is Bill Federer, who's a best-selling author. He's a highly sought-after speaker, and he's my good friend. This is Jerry Newcomb on Vocal Point. And Bill, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Sure. So, Bill, it seems like America has gone astray. We went from one nation under God to who knows what we are. In fact, recently I had the privilege to talk with Michael Reagan, the son of Ronald Reagan, and I reminded him of that great quote from his dad where he said, America is one nation under God, but if we ever forget that, we'll be one nation gone under. And Michael Reagan said, well, welcome to one nation gone under. And it's this very difficult spot that we're in, but God can change things even in a heartbeat if enough of his people, you know, get back involved and pray more and so forth. What are your thoughts?
Right. Well, I sort of think that ancient Israel is a model because they were a people that did not have a king. And then they eventually had the priests stop teaching the law, and every man did what was right in their own eyes and turns into chaos. And then they demanded a king, and then they had power concentrate more and more in a centralized form of government. But then you see these cycles in Israel that they would get away from God, then they would repent, then they'd come back to God, they would be blessed. And then after they were blessed for a while, they would backslide, and then God would send prophets to them to repent. They wouldn't repent. And then God would let judgment come, and he would let the Amalekite and the Hittite and the Moabite and the termite, mosquito bite, the parasite, all the ites, they would come in and oppress them, and then they would cry out to God in their distress. And then he would send a deliverer, and then they would renew their covenant with God. And it went around this cycle over and over again for couple hundred years. And I sort of feel America's following that same pattern. And I expect that, and my hope is that enough people will repent and will turn back to the Lord, and God will grant us a reprieve.
But you weren't finished. Go ahead.
Well, so one of the kings is Manasseh, wicked, wicked king, sacrificing children to Moloch. There's nothing more unjust than killing innocent babies that didn't do anything wrong. What's a just God supposed to do? If he's silent, he's giving consent to that. Like in a wedding ceremony, if you're silent, you're giving consent. And so if there are sins and God's silent, he's effectively giving consent to the sin. And if God gives consent to sin, he denies his just nature. He denies himself. He cannot deny himself. He has to judge the sin. And so Manasseh, the prophets come to him and tell him, you are doing the same thing that the Canaanites that were here before Israel came in were doing. And because they were doing it, God brought Israel in to judge them. And because you're doing it, I'm going to judge you and drive you out. So the judgment was pronounced. But then Manasseh has a grandson, Josiah, a teenager when he, 8 years old when he becomes a king, teenager when he starts to seek the Lord. Early 20s, he tells him to clean out the temple that his granddad Manasseh had neglected and trashed. The storage room, and they find the law of God. And Josephus said it was the last copy of law on the planet because Manasseh was destroying copies of the law. Anyway, they bring it to this young king, read it to him, and he rips his garments and repents. And he sends to a prophetess in town to ask what's going to happen. And her name was Huldah, the wife of the king's tailor. And she had a reputation for hearing from the Lord. And she said, tell the man that sent you that judgment's coming, but not during his lifetime, because he repented. And so Josiah had this huge Passover, probably one of the biggest ones ever. He tore down these Sodomite temples, even temples that Solomon had built. That's right, the Solomon that built the temple, married 1,000 pagan wives and built pagan temples for them. But Josiah tore them down, and then he had the Levites go out and teach the law. And it was during that period that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would have heard the law and got on fire for the Lord. Judgment was put off for this entire 31-year reign of Josiah. And so I'm praying for a Josiah generation. We deserve judgment because of all the innocent babies that are killed. But if we repent, God will put it off. That's my belief.
Well, one of the things that seems so frustrating is I get the impression that there's a lot of people who are moral in America, a lot more than you would think based on some of the voting that happens. And sometimes you can't help but feel that maybe not everything is kosher when it comes to the balloting and election integrity and voter integrity and so forth. And you just look at some of the things that are going on. It's like, is this what the American people want? I don't know. In other words, are we really is voter integrity really happening? Now, on the other hand, I look at somebody like, Ron DeSantis, where within the last year or two, he really sought to be very clear and be very careful on voter fraud to make sure it doesn't happen. If the American people want immorality, well, I'm very sad to hear it. But I think what's happening sometimes is that people are voting one way and it's counting another way.
Right. One of the famous cases was Lyndon Johnson. He's running in the Democrat primary in Texas in 1948 for the Senate against a Democrat governor. And he loses, but all of a sudden on election night, there's this talk that there was an uncounted box of ballots that was found in Jim Wells County in Texas, which happens to be the county where LBJ is from. And George Parr, P-A-R-R, was the political boss for that county. And they have LBJ's campaign manager goes down there to, quote unquote, help out. And by the end of the week, lo and behold, they found a little bit over 200 extra ballots, which put LBJ over the top. He won the Democrat primary. Well, the Democrat governor said, wait a second, and he demands an investigation. And the investigation shows that the extra ballots were names from the local cemetery written in alphabetical order in the same handwriting and in the same colored ink. And it was all fraud. And so it goes before the Democrat Central Committee in Texas, and it's a tie. And then it gets appealed to the Supreme Court Justice, Hugo Black, and he says, well, I'm not going to intervene in Texas Democrat state politics. And so he says no. And they get some Democrat delegate who's a businessman who's off in Tennessee. They have him come back, and he throws his one vote, and it sides with LBJ, and he gets elected U.S. Senator. And so this is a precinct 13, right, in Jim Wells County, Alice, Texas. And it was the classic voter fraud story. So that was 1948. So you can either believe that there's never been any voter fraud since, or that they've just been perfecting this. You look at John F. Kennedy running for president against Nixon, a very close race. Believe it or not, Nixon was very popular. And there was one precinct in Chicago that the story is that the mob boss swung it for John F. Kennedy. He won that precinct. That was enough to tip over to win all of Chicago. And of course, whoever wins Chicago wins the entire state of Illinois and gets all the electoral votes for Illinois. And so it's sort of the ongoing joke of dead people vote in Chicago. And so there's stories that wherever you have human nature, you're going to be having stories of voter fraud. A famous line attributed to Stalin was, it doesn't matter who votes, what matters is who counts the votes. And I have some personal anecdotal stories because I ran for Congress in the year 2000 against Dick Gebhardt. So he was the Nancy Pelosi, right before Nancy Pelosi, he was the number one Democrat congressman. And on election day, we get calls to our office that my name was accidentally left off the ballot in five wards in the city of St. Louis. And then we get calls that I was ahead during the counting and the electricity went off in the Board of Election. When they rebooted it, We went from ahead to behind. And then we're at our watch party, and I get a call from our volunteer, Janet McMillan, and she was down there at the Jefferson County Board of Election checking off the ballots, the precincts, and she says, they can't find the box of ballots from Guffey Elementary School. It's like, that was the school, the voting place I stood in front of for 8 hours today in the cold, shaking thousands of hands. It was the biggest precinct. And you're telling me they lost the box of ballots? And so when you personally experience these things, then people that don't believe there's voter fraud, just try running for office and then come back and tell me what you
think. Well, I'm glad you can laugh about this all these years later. Okay, listen, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left. This could be very discouraging to people listening to this, thinking that, well, then why should I even bother? I'm just going to, you know, unplug from politics that much more and not get involved. But that's the very last thing we want to communicate to the conservative Christian, correct? And do you agree with the point that David Barton has made on different occasions that if true Christians, you know, voted their conscience and showed up, you know, en masse, on election day or at election time or whatever, you know, following all the right rules and everything, properly, you know, as opposed to somebody else, you know, in this whole equation, that we could virtually, you know, change every single election because there's enough of us. So what are your thoughts? There's a lot of things there, but I want you to encourage Christians in the remaining minutes that we have left.
Right. So you vote, but also get involved in the process. So one church I know of that they got people to sign up ahead of time to be the judges behind the table asking for your license. And just by having Christians there made it harder for the bad people to do their voter fraud. It's like, okay, I got to do this without them watching. Oh, they're watching. So stop. And then there's another church that had people.
Can you speak closer into the mic there, if you would? Go ahead.
Another church had men with their lawn chairs sit out in near the drop-off boxes with their iced tea and their cell phones, and people would stop their car, get out with a handful of ballots. Now, the law says you're only supposed to drop off your own ballot. And so these, what they call mules, these people that were illegally forging ballots, and they would get paid by the number of ballots they drop off. And so they would take pictures of them as they're dropping them in the box. And we'll hear, as soon as they walk out of their car with a handful of ballots, these guys with their lawn chairs and their iced tea just pull out their cell phone. They're just recording them. And the person looks over, sees them, turns around, gets back in their car and drives away. And what happens is just by getting Christians involved in the process discourages, makes it harder for them to do the voter fraud. And so I encourage everybody to vote, but also get involved in the entire process. In the states where it is legal to do ballot harvesting, where you know, ahead of time sign up and you be the one to go around to the houses and ask them if you can take their ballot and drop it off in those states where that's legal, let's get Christians involved in doing that. And but they can't cheat on every race every time. So and then finally, it's up to God. So God is watching you to see what you will do, whether we win or not. You're showing him by your actions whose side you're on.
Excellent. OK, we have 45 seconds left for a closing thought. What about that observation that if Christians showed up, voted their values, we would win virtually every time?
Right. Yeah. The precincts with the lowest voter turnout have the most Christians. And you go, what? Yeah, because they've been taught this thing. If you're really Christian, you won't get involved. And my response is, okay, your silence, like in a wedding ceremony, gives consent to the wedding vows. If there's evil things going on and you're not voting and you're silent and you're just not involved, you're giving consent to all that evil. And if you give consent to evil, you're going to participate in the judgment. So whether we turn it around or not, You're showing by your actions that you're not in agreement with all the evil that's going on.
Wow. And as Coolidge said, if good men don't hold office, bad men will. AmericanMinute.com for more information. Bill, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.